Flying High on Locked On Eagles, your daily source for the best Philadelphia Eagles news and analysis, brought to you by LockedOnEagles.com. I am your host, Michael Kist. You can follow my work at Inside the Pylon Breaking Football. Follow me on Twitter at Michael J. Kist. As always, I am joined by the best co-host in the game, Mr. 7-Year Streak Without a Bad Day, DJ Frog with Pockets. He is Benjamin Solak of Bleeding Green Nation and NDT Scouting. You can follow him on Twitter at Benjamin Solak. That's S-O-L-A-K, Ben. How you doing, brother?
Oh, every day is a good day to be alive, Mike. I'm excited to get further into this game. There are no all 22 takes today, however, and that's very sad. I do not like having these night games where we don't get the all 22 film on Monday. This is very upsetting to me.
Yeah, it's been a killer, and as much as it pains us to do so, I want to hit on some things about the loss to the Seahawks. Unfortunately, like you said, the all 22 wasn't out when I checked today. Obviously, it's not out right now, so I'm reserving judgment on some things. There are a few things I saw. What I can definitively say is that the Eagles' 10-game streak of 100 rushing yards was broken, sadly. They only amassed 98. It was our second lowest total of the season, 3.76 yards per carry on the ground. And you definitely got the sense that the team was pressing a bit in the second half. Only 5 runs by running backs in that half, 2 runs by Wentz for a total of 7. Ben, I get game scripts, and I hate nitpicking play calling in general because there's so much that we aren't privy to, and quite frankly, we aren't qualified, or at least I'm decidedly not qualified. But what I do want to talk about is us possibly getting away from the philosophy in general that has gotten us here, and something that I hope isn't a trend moving forward when we get down in games. For instance, we go down 13-10 to the Chiefs late in the third. Back in week 2, we have 4 drives after that and run the ball a total of 5 times, with 3 of those coming from Wentz. You know, you can take out the second to last drive due to game script situation, all that stuff, because we were pressing to score points, and it's still only 2 runs from running backs in 17 plays. Go back even further and include the whole half, it's 5 runs from running backs in the second half of that game. With that said, with how the game went against the Seahawks, do you feel like the Eagles tend to throw the baby out with the bathwater? In regards to the pass run ratio in the second half, is that something that you're concerned about as well?
Right. I remember we talked about this after the Chiefs game specifically, saying that, you know, this was something about which we were worried. We didn't want this to be a common theme. 2016, Doug's first year, in my experience at least, had a lot of that, where he kind of moved away from the running game early and he was a lot more willing to just kind of throw the ball and everything. After that Chiefs game, you get on a winning streak, you stop talking about it. And obviously, the Eagles, I think, had a much better balance going forward, which is very much often the case when you're winning, obviously. It's very easy to maintain a run-pass ratio when you're in the lead, when you're in control of the game. And so a lot of it, you know, has to be situational. I think also it really reveals the extent to which this is Carson Wentz's offense and this is Carson Wentz's team. As we talked about in the Monday show, he was out of rhythm in the first half. He missed a couple of throws, you know, some bad plays, and he came out in that second half, and that opening drive that they had, I believe it was about 11 plays long, that drive, the fumble, and they only ran the ball 3 times on that drive, and it threw it another 8 times. Now, Carson Wentz had a scramble in there, right, but 8 called pass plays to 3 called run plays. Very clearly, the hope there is to get Carson into a rhythm, to get the offense moving, pick up a couple of first downs, right? That was a fantastic drive, should have been a touchdown drive, so they come out in the very next drive, 6 straight passes. Right. Very, very clear that, you know, at that point, you know, you're not even halfway through the third quarter yet for those drives. Right. You absolutely can run the football. There's no, you know, I don't think it's a fear of the clock whatsoever. I don't think it's even, you know, I don't want to run the ball. I don't think running the ball is effective. Like you said, we break that 100-yard streak, but we ran for 98 yards. We ran the ball well. You know, picking up 98 yards is perfectly reasonable, respectable number. I think it's about the fact that this offense, as we kind of saw against Seattle, really struggles to stay afloat if Carson's not, you know, clicking on all cylinders. And obviously, you know, that sounds a little bit obvious to say, you know, like, no duh, you know, the quarterback's not clicking and the offense isn't playing well. Sure. It's just, it's a specific thing to note, in my opinion, for a young second year quarterback like Carson Wentz, and especially one who comes from the background from which he comes, FCS program, you know, he doesn't have all that starting experience. He wasn't a 4-year guy in high school or whatever. So he's going to have these games where he's just rough. You know, he's going to be rough around the edges for the next couple of years, most likely. You know, that's kind of the reality there. And so on those games, I think Doug Peterson and his coaching staff recognize we have to do everything possible to get Carson moving and get him back in this game and get him playing well. Otherwise, you know, we don't have a shot of winning, because he's He's that integral to the offense.
Yeah, and it's something to take a deeper look into because we run so many run pass options that maybe I'm being unfair to Peterson here. Maybe there are plays that...
Of course. That's a great point. That's a great point. That, I didn't think about that. That's awesome.
Yeah, so that's something I want to take a look at when the All-22 drops. So like I said, I'm reserving judgment on a lot of these things, but that is something that I do want to look at more in depth because like you said, with Wentz being a second-year quarterback, Doug Peterson is also a second-year head coach, and that's a tendency that I hope that it doesn't last. I was talking with you about this earlier today. I was just going through the Pro Football Focus signature stats. Remember, rate, review, leave your Twitter handle in the review, give us 5 stars. We will register you to win a free PFF Edge subscription worth $40. Make sure you do that. All right, so Wentz was pressured on 29 of 50 of his dropbacks. That was the highest percentage. Yeah, 58%. Highest percentage all week. Now, in those dropbacks, 14 for 26, 217, one touchdown, no interceptions. Jeez. Sacked 3 times, and it was the 7th lowest sack percentage as well. We're right around 10%. So he actually, those 3 sacks might sound like a lot, but compared to how much he was pressured.
3 is a pretty reasonable number, in my opinion.
Right. So, okay. And then you look at his quarterback rating there was 94.6. Coming into the game under pressure, and this is just on snaps that PFF says there was a pressure on this snap. So it's obviously up to, you know, the opinion of whoever's charting it. But, I mean, either way, we could tell that he was under a lot of pressure just from the eye test, and we'll get more into the tape and whatnot. But coming into the game, he had a quarterback rating of 81.6 under pressure. As a rookie, he had a 34 quarterback rating in 2016 under
pressure.
That's
not good. Yeah. What's the number for when you just like, if you just spike the ball into the ground on every pass, it's like 30 something. It's around 30, I think it is. So that'd be less than ideal there, Mike.
And then they also have for all the other dropbacks. So 29 out of 50 pressured, the other dropbacks, the other 21 kept clean. He was 15 of 19, 131, 0 touchdowns, 1 interception. He had a 73.5 quarterback rating. So he was substantially better under pressure in this game. So, and I know we talked about him having some up and downs, but that is one heck of a performance for being under fire all night. And I did not expect to see those stats when I looked it up today. I was just kind of randomly doing it. So, and you asked this, is this a case of where Carson might end up being in that Russell Wilson category of better passer outside of the pocket than inside of it?
Yeah, and you saw it last night with Wilson. That was a really great, in my opinion, case study on how Wilson looks as a quarterback when he's playing very, very well, right? Obviously, he had a great game, MVP caliber game against the Eagles. You know, if you want to see bad Wilson, then you can go watch some of the other games in which the Seahawks have like 4 field goals and that's it, and you'll see how sometimes it isn't that... You know, Wilson doesn't succeed that much under pressure, but Wilson has always been, from the memories I have of him at Wisconsin, NC State, has always been a player who is just more effective outside of the pocket than he is inside the pocket. He's just not a very comfortable guy inside of the pocket, passing the football, breaks pockets too easily. This is the reality of stuff that he does, part of the reason why he was drafted in the 3rd round, along with being a pretty short dude. You know, he's not very comfortable in the pocket. Now, when he's outside the pocket, he's straight magical. And as we know, Carson Wentz has those magical moments outside of the pocket as well. Now, Carson's shown that he can pass from the pocket just fine. You know, he's done an excellent job executing Doug Peterson's scheme. But as we saw against Seattle, you know, he really, really, I think, in my opinion, had, you know, those pressure stats. I think he had a much better game outside of the pocket than he did inside of the pocket. And as I alluded to on the Monday show, one of the flaws on Carson Wentz's resume, one of the weaknesses in his game, is his ability to kind of make slow, you know, subtle movements inside of the pocket to avoid pressure and to extend his time to throw while remaining in the pocket. He doesn't like to do that. He'd rather just break it, just get outside, nobody around him, direct traffic, point guys around. And so we may see a career arc for Carson. And as I've always said, that Ben Roethlisberger comp always bothers me a little bit because Roethlisberger is a pocket dude. He likes to throw from the pocket, right? He can break, but he likes to be in the pocket and he can make throws from the pocket. I think there's a very real career arc for Carson where he becomes just a quarterback who is naturally more effective outside of the pocket on the move. Right. And I was calling for rollouts last night because of it. I think we could very well see that. And though these pressure stats help to reveal kind of that tendency, in my opinion.
Very, very good points. Okay, let's do something else positive here since there were some solid performances in this game. I want to give out a game ball again this week, Ben. So let's hand one out. I'll go first, if you don't mind. I'm going to hand it out to Nelson Aguilar. He was targeted 12 times for 7 catches, 141 yards, and a touchdown. He had a drive in the third quarter that transitioned into the fourth, where he had 78 yards on 2 catches, 1 for 51 yards, that sparked the drive after Wentz took a sack from Justin Coleman, which was big on 3rd and 13, which, by the way, good job on that sack from the Seahawks disguising the blitz. With the safety was capping Coleman, but he had enough of an inside shade to where nobody really alerted that Coleman was coming in hot, so we missed that one. That was something that we nailed against the Bears the previous week on Nelly's touchdown, where the safety was capped and Nelly was like, yo, this is a blitz, this is a blitz, and we were able to get into that bubble and score a touchdown. So the Seahawks put a little wrinkle in there and played with the shading, and it fooled us. But anyway, the next play, Nelly goes for 51 on 3rd and 13. That crazy play where Wentz extended the play, rolled out to his right. He was able to make an insane throw, and Nelly got behind a guy, followed up by Nelly coming through in the clutch on 3rd and 14 for a 27-yard touchdown catch that pulled the Eagles within one score. His emergence has been fantastic to watch. I couldn't be happier for the guy. And I wrote about him a few weeks ago for LockedOnEagles.com. The article was called The Nelson Also Rises. So go check that out. A little nod to Ernest Hemingway. You like that. Yeah. Okay. So, Ben, who do you got as your game ball?
I think Nelly is undisputably the game ball receiver. But to go for a different direction for you, I think I'm going to give it to Brandon Graham. Brandon Graham, who goes ahead, 5 total tackles, 4 of them solo, which is that's a great ratio. And then 1.5 sacks, 2.5 tackles for loss on a day where so many different defenders were getting close but not quite getting there. Brandon Graham was the finisher, right? Here, I'll give it to you this way. If you had to guess Vinnie Curry's stats for the game right now, what would you guess they were?
Oh, geez, man.
No looking, no peeking.
I'm not looking at anything. Vinnie Curry seemed like a fairly big non-factor to me. They were running up the middle. They were getting on the edges in the read option game when Wilson kept it. I don't know, four tackles?
Yeah, Vinnie Curry had one tackle and Jeez. Nothing else. Right.
I was trying to give him credit.
Right. You saw Vinnie Curry like in the backfield. You saw him causing pressure. You saw him attacking. You saw him breaking and getting and putting pressure on Russ. One tackle, right? Like that just kind of illustrates Fletcher Cox, 2 tackles, nothing else. Timmy Jernigan, 2 tackles, nothing else. Derek Barnett, 1 total tackle, half of a sack and half of a TFL. So that was, you know, Derek Barnett. That's literally his one tackle right there, right? Chris Long, 2 tackles, nothing else. So that defensive line, which had a huge impact on the game, unquestionably, it doesn't show up in the stat sheet for anybody but Brandon Graham, right? Brandon Graham now, past 5 weeks, he's got 4.5 sacks. He's got a sack in 4 of his last 5 games. So he's really been coming on as of late. It was a little bit touch and go there in the beginning of the season. And at this point now, you know, so far in... What year is this? 2017. In 2017, 8.5 sacks for Brandon Graham. That's his career best. So he's playing to his numbers. You've heard that he could potentially be extended. And he was the defensive player who had the biggest impact against the Seahawks. And, you know, he was able to get home far more often than anybody else. So my game ball is going to Brandon Graham.
Very nice. And that's something that we can touch on real quick, too. I want to put this out there because there was the article from Pro Football Talk saying that Howie was trying to get a deal done with Brandon Graham. And Brandon Graham was quote unquote resisting. Brandon Graham is signed to this team through 2018. So Everyone calm down. Secondly, it's a pretty smart move by Brandon Graham not letting Howie preempt the market with him when he's already signed through next year as well. So a smart business move by him. And if you want to criticize him for not being not taking a team-friendly deal or whatever, he took a team-friendly deal when he incentivized his contract and decided, "Oh, you know what? I'll show you and I'll get paid for all these sacks and everybody will win." So let's take it easy on calling out Brandon Graham for not wanting to extend yet. There's two sides to this. Anyway, that's my little note on that.
Strong agree. Very interesting. Brandon Graham, Nigel Bradham, figuring out who's going to get that money. If they don't re-sign Nigel, Your boy will be upset.
Yeah, and we will definitely be looking at linebacker in the draft. Speaking of which, let's kick it over to our Pick a Prospect segment. All right, so Pick a Prospect, if you haven't heard of it before and you're a new listener, every week or every other week, me and Ben highlight a player that the Eagles might be targeting in the NFL draft this year. So let's see. I'm going to go with, you know, Halapuli Vaitivaitai really struggled. And we've talked about him being pretty much a backup. So yeah. I want to discuss someone. This isn't someone I think the Eagles might be targeting, but this is someone I watched the other day and I asked you about him. And I want to have a discussion about him because You've watched him. So I'm going to bring up Chukwuma Okorafor from
Nailed it, dude.
Nice, thank you. From Western Michigan. He played on the other side of Taylor Moton when they were, I believe, the runner-up for the Joe Moore Offensive Line Award in college last year. He caught my eye then. A real big dude, 6'5", 330, probably has arms that are 35 inches or more that from what it looks like. My issue with him... Okay, he's got quick feet, which is fantastic. I like his feet for a big man. He just tends to, his hands get a little bit late. He's not as violent as I would like him to be for his size. And I think he fits more of a man run scheme than he does a zone run scheme, which is what the Eagles primarily run for the most part. What did you see from him that talks to his fit with the Eagles? Am I right with those concerns that he may not fit a zone running scheme?
Yeah, Chukwa, who I don't know if that's what they actually call him, but I want to call him Chukwa because I think it's a lot of fun. But Okorafor, good football player, violent football player, exciting football player, incredibly powerful. If you know, we'll talk a lot about in offensive line prospects and in defensive line prospects, coiling and uncoiling the hips, generating power from the ground up. If you want to like figure out what that looks like, go put on some Okorafor tape because the dude's a spring at 330 pounds. It's awesome. Mm. He gets underneath you, he's going to explode through you. He's a people mover. And that'll fit in both schemes. You got a guy who can move people the way Okorafor can, you can fit that in both schemes. But the fact of the matter is, yeah, he's a good mover for his size, and you can pull him if you need to, tackle power sort of looks in a man-blocking scheme. But in a zone scheme, you know, especially for a tackle, that's a guy who, you know, you've seen those clips of Jason Peters knocking down defensive backs 8 yards down the field on outside zone concepts. That's special. Remember, Jason Peters used to be a tight end at Arkansas. He's got great movement skills. It's a very tough ask. You know, a lot of, you know, think about Lane Johnson. Lane Johnson, I don't know his weight off the top of my head, but he's around, I would say, 305, 310. Right? Chukwuma Okorafor.
I actually did this when Kelvin Benjamin got traded. I went to mockdraftable.com. I converted Lane Johnson to a cornerback, and I put his spider web next to Kelvin Benjamin, and it looked like a pretty even matchup, brother. So he's definitely an athletic tackle.
Right. Lane's an unbelievable athlete. I just looked it up. 310 is the number Google's given me. Chukwuma Okorafor is about 20, 25 pounds heavier. It's a lot of mass to be carrying, folks. And so, you know, I think you could pull off a zone blocking play with him. In a zone blocking scheme where you ask him to do that very, very consistently, I would be worried about conditioning and then about just play-to-play consistency and execution. You know, so I would definitely, if the Eagles draft him, the Eagles play a mix of zone and man, they could pull it off. But right. I definitely do think they'll be looking for more lighter bodies and guys with better movement skills than Chukwu. But good football player, a lot of fun.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And that is a guy that we would be looking at the end of the first round, along with Rankins from Mississippi State. So that's kind of the area that I wanted to target for offensive tackle. I like Okorafor. I thought he had some misses on the second level when I watched his tape. I thought he had some issues with his hands. You can watch his Wisconsin game from 2016 with him against T.J. Watt, who's a darn good football player. And T.J. Watt kind of ate his sandwich a little bit. I saw a little bit more from him in 2017 technique-wise, but you know, there's that concern as well. Ben, who do you got?
Yeah, Okorafor was like 100 pounds heavier than Watt in that matchup or something. It was funny. Matt Miller, Bleacher Report, you know, at NFL Draft Scout on Twitter, one of the leading guys in the draft business, dropped an article today.
Roquan.
Yeah, I'm talking Roquan Smith. Dropped an article today, one draft prospect that's so far been tied to every single team. You know, he talks to people, he's got insider information. Very surprised to see the name that was there for Philadelphia. So I want to talk about him. If you read this article, go read it, and you'll see this guy. Roquan Smith, a junior linebacker out of Georgia. Reason I was surprised is because I don't think Roquan's going to be around pick 31, right, folks. He's a very talented young football player. Lot to like about Roquan Smith. Now, you know, I've talked with a couple people about how I don't think linebacker is as big of a need to make it a round one selection potentially instead of offensive tackle, which in my opinion is a much more valuable position, a much more bigger position of need. And so I still think offensive tackle is the direction. However, if you're going linebacker round one, the first dude on your list is Roquan Smith. I've been working on like comp for him. As of right now, I like Telvin Smith. And not Telvin Smith when he came out of university, but Telvin Smith right now in the NFL. Telvin Smith came out at about 215. He was 6'3", right? Now, Roquan Smith is 6'1", listed at 225. I'm going to say he's 230, 232, something like that, all right? Mm. So there's a size differential there, but Telvin is definitely a little bit more yoked up now that he's in the NFL. And Roquan Smith, a little bit undersized, right? 6'1", 6', but you put their tape next to each other. These are some of the best gap shooters you've ever seen. You know, they see it develop incredibly quickly. They already know the way your offensive line is moving from step one, step two, and then they've got that reactionary quickness, that split-second reflex to go take a gap before you can get your blocker in. All of a sudden, brothers in the backfield before the quarterback's got the ball to the halfback. Mm. It's a special skill, right? Reuben Foster had this skill as well. He had a real knack for that. Reuben Foster, in my opinion, a bit more linear of an athlete, not as great in space moving laterally, and then he was a bit more of a thumper, which would give him more of like a Ryan Shazier, CJ Mosley comp, the ones that you heard when Foster came out, whereas Telvin Smith and Roquan are much more finesse players, much more quick, in my opinion, and so I like that comp for him if you want to understand how Roquan Smith plays. Again, I think Roquan will be a top 20 selection. Do not anticipate him falling to Philadelphia. Very interesting to hear, however, that the Eagles are tied to clear round one linebacker prospects. They're doing their homework. You've got Nigel, Michael, and Jordan all with uncertain futures in Philadelphia over the next 2 years, so it's cool to see them doing their homework on linebacker prospects.
So let's bring up some more names that we could be talking about in that area, because I don't think Roquan Smith is going to be there as well. Do you think there's a chance right now? I mean, it's the process is long and the NFL draft is decadent and depraved, but do you think Rashawn Evans from Alabama could be there?
It's very interesting. Rashawn Evans maybe. Rashawn Evans is a very interesting eval for me. Folks love him. I find him very, very, you know, they love watching his tape. I have a little bit more pause with Evans than most people do. Athlete playing linebacker. Incredibly talented, skilled, gifted human being. One of the best pass rushers from linebacker I've ever seen. So physical, so dominant. You wonder about his instincts, though. You wonder if he's just a truck who just drives around the field and takes people out. Because sometimes you find him outside of position. He's got a buddy, a teammate, Sean Dion Hamilton, who went out with injury. But Hamilton may still declare because he's a senior, I believe. Much more instinctual. Much truer to his keys. You know, makes better decisions, in my opinion. Not the physical freak that he is. Watching Evans through the draft process is going to be very interesting. I'm not deep into his tape, so it's not a solidified take, but I'm not, you know, Roquan's clear one for me. Evans is back there. Only other names that you could really think of, Jerome Baker is a guy, Ohio State, very undersized. He gets bullied around. He had good 2016 tape, but 2017 not as strong. You know, he gets moved around too easily. He's a small dude, but he's great in coverage. You know, he's a good mover. And then Malik Jefferson, reported that he potentially declared out of Texas. Not sure on that one yet. He's a junior. 246-2. Guy's an athletic freak. One of the best athletes I've ever seen at the linebacker position scouting, bar none. But he is not great between the ears. He's just not certain about his keys yet. He's not a heady player. He's very linear. And so he's another really interesting one. A team might take a flyer on him at the end of the first because of the athletic potential, but I'm not sold on the on-field product. Those are the only names I can think of at linebacker.
Gotcha. What about Tremaine Edmonds from Virginia Tech? Have you checked him out at all?
And Tremaine Edmonds, very good player. Edmonds is an interesting one. He's very young. He's 20, and I'm not positive that he's coming out. And so I haven't gone deep into his tape whatsoever, but he's a very interesting talent. Edmonds, huge. He's like 6'3" or something.
6'5" is what he's listed at.
That's 10 types of silly. 6'5" linebacker. You know, you're talking about how you cover tight ends, right? Well, you get yourself a 6'5" linebacker who has movement skills like Tremaine Edmonds, you solved your problem.
And his father was an NFL All-Pro tight end in 1989. Teams always love the NFL bloodline, so he's got that going for him. All right. Ben, I'm working right now with a Locked On Rams reached out, and we're going to try to get them scheduled up. That might end up being a Thursday show. So keep an eye out for that. We will let you know on Twitter. Remember, at Locked On Eagles is live. Go follow them on Twitter. It is a follow back account. So if you want a free follow, go follow Locked On Eagles. Plus, get all your Eagles news and analysis. Know when podcasts drop. Participate in polls. Yell at us, whatever you want to do. Ben, do you have anything else for the gentle listeners?
Well, I mean, yeah, just pay attention to the schedule, because if it's Thursday, then we got to shake things around a little bit. But, yeah, keep it locked on here. I mean, usually I do the schedule, but you already did the schedule, man.
Keep it locked
on. Job.
Keep it locked on here on Locked On Eagles. Fly, Eagles,
caw-caw.
Fly.